information sharing and data warehousing, trying to get the various branches of the federal government and of your department to share information and effectively use it. The January 2005 GAO high-risk series report identifies appropriate and effective information sharing mechanisms in Homeland Security as one of the new areas of high risk. And when they issued this report this year, they stated, as in prior GAO high-risk update reports, federal programs and operations are also emphasized when they are at high risk because of their greater vulnerabilities to fraud, waste, abuse, and mismanagement, and are in need of transformation. In looking to the processes of transforming that area, which is going to be so critical to our success, I wanted to ask you some questions of your thoughts of the issues of the application of commercial processes for information sharing. In my district, we have NCR, which is one of the preeminent data management and Teradata companies in the country. They do the processes for Walmart and Federal Express, which are both known as companies that utilize information and data sharing to make certain that they are successful. And in talking to representatives of NCR, they talk about the process that they work with clients and looking to what information is needed and then designing systems both that produce data and that can manage data and effectively.
Shut the hell up, you right-wing hacks. We all know what's going down with this revising of the Patriot Act. It's not about the safety of the citizens any more than your goose-stepping military machine over in Iraq and Afghanistan is about the liberation and freedom of the masses of people over there. Your little Patriot Act has all types of things that gives the real deal. Detaining people without them knowing what charges. The FBI can check your computer and other things in your home without you knowing, without your basic knowledge. You can declare whoever you want in and outside of this world a terrorist. And if you happen to be supporting that group, who most likely is just some kind of human rights group, fighting against the terrorism you're against, then you declare that person a terrorist. No, I think we know who the real terrorist is and who needs to be slayed. Slavery old time. Check this out. You're listening to 104.1, 106.7 Illinois, 101.1 Santa Cruz, 107.5 North Carolina, LUBER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe, and click in to your Slave Revolt blog. Just tap into your Google Web, Slave Revolt Radio, and find out what time it is. Tonight, we're going to shoot our way into dealing with how was the Taliban's public relation machine going on with America and through the corporate media before September 11th, 2001. You'll find out what we mean. We got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. Slave. Revolt.
Everything you know is wrong.
Hello, seekers. Here we go again. And hello, especially to the skeptic inside you who might still believe.
We'll be right back.
Alright, you know what time it is. Ruins of Empire. And tonight we're going to start off on how there's no honor amongst thieves. You know, in March of 2001, the Taliban-led government of Afghanistan sent Saeed Hashemi, their ambassador at large, to the U.S. to help shape American public opinion of the Taliban government, help shape it in a good light. This, of course, was pre-September 11th, 2001. And Sam, at the time, was in various forms of negotiations with the Taliban over oil, basically, pipelines, capital private interests. Now, we're going to explore how this event took place in the days that he was over in America, talking about Hashemi, the little Taliban official, and how the corporate industrial market resource exploiting military machine plays itself and played itself out. Now, Hashemi was on NPR's Talk of the Nation show, hosted by the then host, Juan Williams. They go into various topics of what was going on at the time. And we'll take it step by step through this situation. So first off, Williams asked Hashemi, why is the Taliban stopping women from working with AIDS groups? You know, groups over there doing whatever type of aid and stuff. Food aid through the UN was his main concern. So let's see how the Taliban official responds, and let's see how things are played out from there. Check this out.
And we're brought... Speaking of the United Nations, just this week the United Nations has expressed concern over the fact that their food aid program has been disrupted and they're not going to stop supplying some of this food aid because the Taliban, yes, the regime ruling Afghanistan, is not allowing women to work for the United Nations and go into individual households in Kabul and look to see if, in fact, the food is getting to people who are hungry. Why is the Taliban refusing to allow women to work with international charitable aid groups?
We have never said that. We have said that we cannot accept a state within a state. We welcome anybody assisting us, but they should not dictate their rules. We appreciate any kind of assistance, but that assistance should not be politicized. And the problem of what you are mentioning was with WFP, and that problem has been resolved now. We have said that they can help, but they have to obey the rules.
So how is it resolved?
It was resolved later on when the United Nations fired their new staff and sent new staff. It happens when the United Nations is taking somebody from the streets of New York and then bring him there, who knows nothing about the culture, who knows nothing about the religion, nothing about the tradition, and nothing about the people. And they just jump there and poke around. So they do things from their own perspective, which is wrong. So we ask them to send professional people. And when they did it, it's okay now.
Lauren Jenkins.
Well, isn't one of the problems with all the relief agencies has been this problem of they can't get enough local staff because, again, the prohibition on women working with them. Traditionally, the women of Afghanistan played a very vital role in all the relief organizations. And now they go there and they find that they're so limited in what they can do and who they can reach that a lot of them have found it have pulled out. Found it very difficult to continue providing what is obviously needed aid to Afghanistan.
Well, these organizations are still working there, and the women are working with them in according to the rules of the government. And when we say that the United Nations or any organization, when they're working with women, when we say that there should be segregated workplaces, it doesn't mean that we don't want them to work there. There were organizations from irresponsible places that came there and exploited women, and then took them outside for political asylum and received them and took them to Singapore and Thailand and sold them. So we don't have a very good experience with these.
This is not the United Nations.
This is not the United Nations, of course. This is some NGOs that have done that.
Some charitable groups have taken
Afghani
women
and
taken them out of the country and sold them into slavery?
Yeah. There were so many kinds of organizations that they would come there and do some things. And we have to be very cautious while dealing with it. I don't blame the United Nations. The United Nations is doing their job. But that's not enough. We have said that they have to come more. Their bases are not even in Afghanistan. They are living in Pakistan. They have said, please move your offices into Afghanistan.
All right, so you can see what's kind of going on here. It kind of really helped get going with Layla Helms. She was coordinating with the Taliban government while it was in power. And she is the niece of Richard Helms, the former director of the CIA and the former U.S. ambassador to Iran. So she staged this meeting at the time for this Hashemi to come over to America. He met with top officials. He, tours NPR. And he puts this spin on that the Taliban is this misunderstood. That they're not really that bad. They respect the rights of women. And as you see, it's just like any other type of public relation going on. This is pre the 9/11 hit, where things really started to shift. During this particular time in March, the U.S. was still in negotiations with the Taliban regime. They actually celebrated the Taliban regime's coming into power of 90% of the region in Afghanistan. And they were basically trying to work out that little oil pipeline strategy. They knew the route going through Iran was out. Russia wasn't going to allow it to go through them. So Afghan portion of the population territory was their option. And as long as those things seemed to be going somewhat well, then of course them blowing up the Buddhist statue, those two Buddhist statues that they blew up, some ancient Buddhist statues that were there before the Islams got there in the 9th century and stuff. This people were like, ah, these dudes are, this is some sick stuff. They're blowing up their national heritage and all of this type of stuff. They're giant Buddhist statues and stuff, colossal. You know, it'd be like the Arab inhabitants of Egypt, who are not the indigenous inhabitants of Egypt, blowing up the pyramid and Sphinx and stuff, you know, and saying, oh, it's not, you know, it's not Islam, you know, that type of thing. So people would go, yeah, we know that, but, you know, it's kind of sick, don't you think? This is how these clowns were conducting themselves. And they were trying to put a good spin on their face about what was going on in Afghanistan. And as you can see, they're trying to win over the American population that the brutality that's going on towards the population as a whole, it's just misinterpretation, rumors. So next, Williams asks Hashemi about, hold on a sec.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a little more context to this situation so you understand the logic of the American position. They were unable to build that pipeline because every time they got to building it, then somebody come and blow up a section or something like that. Because Afghan warlords had their little factions going on. And one faction, the Northern Alliance, is fighting against this faction and that faction. And just, you know, they made it very difficult for this pipeline to be built. by the Taliban coming to power, it meant that, okay, the Taliban gonna put the strong hand on Afghanistan. They gonna make it possible for this pipeline to happen. And it was also a continuation of a relationship that had already been built for over a decade, beginning with the invasion of Afghanistan by the Soviet Union. Remember, what became the Taliban was pretty much involved in fighting against the Soviet Union with the help of the United States. So, you know, with that background, I think it starts to make sense, you know, we understand the motivation of Sam.
Now, next, Williams asked Hashami about the silly little Taliban destroying the ancient Buddha statue. So let's hear Hashami's spin on this. Check this out.
All right, now we have to talk a little bit about the statue. As I understand it, in an interview with the New York Times this week, you said you have no remorse over the destruction of these two amazing statues of Buddha that were carved in a mountainside and destroyed by missiles and bombs in the last few days. How is it that you have no feelings over the destruction of such a historical and religious artifact?
Well, I've said when I was here, I heard this. If we were to destroy these statues, why didn't we destroy it 3 years ago? And we said that we'll preserve them. It happened when a group of foreigners came there from the Western world. They said that they are going to repair their statues. And next door, children were dying of malnutrition. And that malnutrition was caused by the sanctions, the economic sanctions. So the Council of Scholars had asked them to please help the children instead of helping the statues. We don't need the statues. Our priority is our children. 700 children died a month ago of malnutrition. So they said, if you're going to help us, please help us with the children. They said, no, this is only for the statues. And the people were pissed off. They said, if you don't care about our children, who are you caring about our past? If you are destroying our future with economic sanctions, then you have no right to protect our heritage.
But on the other hand, Lauren, you can help me here if I'm wrong, but I believe the United States gives $113 million annually in aid to Afghanistan. The world has been helping. So why is it that you would say somehow it's a case of no help coming and then help for the statues? In fact, there was help on both fronts.
Well, there is assistance coming to Afghanistan, and that assistance has an example like this. If I come and snatch $100 from you and then come tomorrow and give you $1 as a charity and ask you to thank me, the sanctions that are imposed by the United Nations cause us millions of dollars each month, and then they give us some $1,000 as charity. We say if they really want to help us, they have to lift the sanctions.
All right, so you can see how this whole thing is just a revolving type of sham type of situation. First of all, you have a criminal organization, a syndicate called the CIA, go around helping consolidate terrorist types of collaboration in the form of the Mujahideen and all of that. They end up, or at least parts of them end up, consolidating into a form called, later, the Taliban. These cats are going around committing all kinds of atrocity against the population, and basically help further disintegrate the society into an almost Stone Age type of situation. And through their own force of politics on the population, they end up undermining access to large portions of the population, even participating in the infrastructure of any kind of working class. So women are beat down into staying into their homes. Many of them who have had husbands who were killed, actually as Taliban fighters, are restricted from the occupation that they once were in. So they're subjugated, even though their husbands were at one time fighters for the Mujahideen against the Soviets and things like that. But so there's a form of gender domination, age domination, clique, tribal, all this stuff is just imploding. And you end up having a situation where the UN, since the UN is not really a body for the masses of people to really get any kind of relief, they're going to do their little sanctions and stuff. Now, they'll impose sanctions on the Taliban, which they did. But everyone knows that Sam was neck deep in creating, helping create all of this chaos and stuff. There's no sanctions, of course, imposed on Sam because Sam would just tap that ass. So the Taliban then is able to say, look, they're picking on us. And then divert attention away from what they have helped played a part in decimating their society and saying, look, our kids are starving because of the UN sanctions, or they care more about some statues, so we're going to blow those statues up. We're going to blow our national heritage up instead in defiance of you guys having the sanctions on us. Some kind of sick, twisted type of stuff like that. But what should also be noted and commented upon is that, you know, I watched this real closely, and I remember that and observed how many people in various groups responded throughout the world. And it was quite interesting to me, especially now when you see like the desecration of the Quran happening, and you have many Muslims and people throughout the world speak out against that and talk about the atrocity. But when these Taliban cats blew up the Buddhist statues, which was an offense to many Buddhist people, you didn't see Muslims all across the world, or many Muslims, you know, and a lot of average everyday Muslims say, hey, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, what is this type of stuff? You know, so it's quite interesting that how you see how this kind of sectarian, chauvinistic, religious type stuff plays into itself. You know, my God's better than your God. My God's better than, you know, all, you know, this silly type stuff and a form of intolerance. So basically, what Hashami's saying is that they were trying to use this whole thing as some kind of childish leverage. Unless you release the sanctions on us, even though we are desperados, just like you guys are desperados, just like Sam and all these other people who have been invading and using the region of Afghanistan as basically a war chest for Silk Road strategies and other things, we're going to blow up statues and stuff. This shows you how people can become more and more degenerated in their behavior and actions when there isn't really a class humanistic perspective in the forefront of the struggle of what they at least claim they're fighting for.
You know what? When Tracy says the words intolerant, I would like to make that really clear. What really went on? What were these Taliban types like? Well, first of all, this civil war really is what it was. It started off in Afghanistan in the late 70s. Here's how it began. There was a political party. I think it was called the People's Democratic Party or something of that order of Afghanistan. And they had a very simple program. They said, land should not lay fallow. It should be distributed amongst the people. That was one thing. They said there was something called a bride price. And they said, look, the bride price is ridiculous. You got to save half your life so you can get married. So, look, they lowered the price, the cost of the bride price. Real simple program. They wasn't looking for a whole lot. And we want to educate the women. We want to educate everybody. We want to set up an educational system that educates both boys and girls. Well, the people who were threatened, whose interests were threatened by that, were one, of course, the landlords, but also a group of people called the mullahs in Afghanistan. The mullahs were like the priest caste. We don't Well, I guess we do have some mullahs here in the United States, don't we? But anyway, the reality is that these mullahs took to the street on that stuff, and stuff started heating up when they would do things like this. One of the future leaders of the Taliban and actually used to run around pouring acid in the face of women who were not wearing the chador. The chador is this garment that covers the entire body, including the head of the female. They shot and murdered. Once this civil war started, they started to shoot these Taliban-type forces. The Mujahideen began. They shot and killed teachers for the crime of teaching young women how to read. This was a real crime to them, you see. So, at this point, this PDP, or the People's Democratic Party, or whatever it was called in Afghanistan, they turned to the Soviet Union and asked for help. And then the Soviet leaders decided, yes, this would be a threat to our border, and we would like to stop these guys. Because they were already consorting with the CIA. How do I know? Do I know all it? Listen, they bragged about it. What's that guy? Carter's foreign aid.
Brzezinski,
right. Openly said on TV that they wanted this conflict to happen so that the Soviet Union could be drawn into a conflict that was almost similar to the Vietnam War for the United States.
The Afghan trap.
That's right. So they did it on purpose and bragged about it. This is not my personal opinion, you see. And when they asked, it wasn't Brzezinski. Yes, Brzezinski, they said, well, my goodness, it sure did cause a lot of problems. And look at this 911. They blew up the building and killed 3,000 Americans. Was it worth all of that? And he said, look, what's the big deal here? We got a few worked up Arabs, and now we don't have the Soviet Union. It's obvious that we were right. He actually said this.
Yeah, he said, what's more important? A bunch of the end of the Cold War and the dismantling of the Soviet Union, or a bunch of worked up Muslims. So he made it clear where he was coming from. And that's what I mean by how Afghanistan got caught within the whole trap of Cold War politics and things of that nature to their own particular detriment. But it's not going to be some force that basically is a couple of Stone Age throws away from being the U.S. Empire themselves. In other words, they have sticks, swords, and machine guns as opposed to rockets and nuclear weapons and stuff. But basically the same type of mentality, especially when you have clowns like Boy George running the ship, who's nothing but a Christian mullah. But next, Hashami is asked by Lauren Jenkins, who's also sitting in with Juan Williams, about Bin Laden and others concerning the sanctions and stuff. So let's see how Hashami deals with this. Check this out.
Well, you know, this is an interesting discussion, but you know, one of the reasons the sanctions are there has to do not with the suffering of the Afghan people, but with the fact that your government continues to harbor Osama bin Laden and a lot of other groups that are sworn enemies of the United States and a lot of other places in the Western world. The issue is terrorism and your continued support of terrorism, which is one reason you're not getting a lot of support from the United States. And you won't get any support, I would imagine, until there's something is done for you to curb the support of international terrorism.
There are problems and the people are suffering because of the sanctions. I agree, it's because of Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden existed in Afghanistan 17 years before we existed. He was there, and such people were instigated to go and fight the Soviets by the government of America and by the CIA. And they were called the heroes of independence by the CIA and the government of America. And we then don't need them anymore. They have transformed them into terrorists. Exactly like Mr. Yasser Arafat was transformed from a terrorist to a hero when they need him now. So we don't know as to what is the definition of terrorism. If they had problems with Osama bin Laden, why didn't they tell us before striking Afghanistan? We would resolve this problem very easily.
Well, excuse me, they have told you. They've been passing on information about him for a long time. Osama bin Laden was chased out of Sudan and went to live in Afghanistan because the United States was approaching the Sudanese government about it, and they've been following him. They've certainly have repeatedly brought up the issue with your government. The idea that he was once a hero and today is a terrorist doesn't hold water. I mean, he has been proven, or at least not yet in court, but certainly all the investigations seem to point that he was responsible for bombing two American embassies and killing hundreds of people.
Well, I said, Phil Richardson was in Kabul in 1997. He never talked about this man. If they needed this man, why didn't they tell us then? All of a sudden, in 98, until 1998, we were called the puppets of America. In 98, we were all sitting at home. 75 cruise missiles fired at Afghanistan. We don't know who did it. And finally, we come out that the United States said that we are trying to kill a man whose name is Osama bin Laden and we want him. So we told the U.S. ambassador in Islamabad that if you needed this man, why didn't you tell us? And why did you try to kill a man without even giving him a fair trial? And even if somebody is a criminal, is the police going to blow his house or take him to a court? We don't think he was a criminal. And we have said, despite we were attacked, despite 19 innocent people were killed, and all these things, we didn't declare war. We were very polite. We had a lot of problems. We went to the U.S. Embassy, and we gave three proposals for resolving this problem. The first one was that if the United States can provide us any kind of evidence that this man was involved in terrorist acts in Kenya and Tanzania, we would punish this man, and in our constitution, anybody found guilty of killing civilians will face capital punishment. And that was rejected. We were told that our judicial system was not acceptable to the United States, and all we should do is that he should be given to New York. Okay, after that, we gave a second proposal. We asked that if the United States thinks that he is a threat to the United States security, we will accept an international monitoring group to watch his activities for the rest of his life, so that he has no telephone, meets nobody, and he is not active even politically against anybody. That was also rejected.
All right, so you can see what's happening. This is kind of sick because, you know, there's elements of truth in what Hashami's saying when he says, you know, okay, first you guys declared Osama a hero. Now you're saying he's a terrorist. We don't understand. We don't think it holds water. Now, there's elements of truth, but he understands. This is this political posturing that's going on for resources and stuff. By the same token, Jenkins and Williams understand. But this is there's an unspoken agreement that this is not supposed to be for public consumption. The real interest and policies of how the corporate military industrial financial machine truly works. So they leave it into this kind of haze of, are you treating your women right? Are you treating the kids right? Are you blowing up statues? So on and so forth. Now, these, of course, are crucial issues. But when you're talking about the issues of women right, do women have the basic right of self-determination? Obviously, they don't. And that's locked into the economic and infrastructure of the world economy and how it's set up in the capital market system and how third world regimes, especially extremely draconian ones, take it out on their particular populations. So these guys are just playing word games when you know, here you have Hashami saying, you know, now you want to kill a man without a trial. The Taliban was running around all the time killing folks without trial. You can go to websites and see them assassinating women, shooting them in the head at, you know, their little stadiums that they at one time were using soccer stadiums, but now they turned into this kind of macabre gladiator type of machine gun stadiums for the population. With some mullah, you know, giving the okay to kill whoever, you know, they decide to get their little hooves into. But what's interesting is that, you know, like I said, what's behind and what was going on. See, this, once again, the reason why I'm playing this is this was before the September 11th event. And at the time, they were trying to work out, Sam was trying to work out their issues with the Taliban over the oil and gas reserves of Central Asia. And there was a point in many of these debates that later happened after March when the U.S. representative told the Taliban, some of the Taliban officials, that, quote, "Either you accept our offer of carpet of gold or we bury you under a carpet of bombs," unquote. Now, this had to do with, basically, they wanted the pipeline from the oil rich fields in Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan. And they were going to go through Afghanistan and Pakistan and out to the Indian Ocean. And this was the cornerstone of Sam's interest in these negotiations. And it got to the point where they were starting to throw out threats. Now, before that reached that particular level, they were trying to help smooth over and let these officials come over like Hashami and go on NPR. And instead of NPR, you know, Williams and all of these guys hitting them up on this, these real global structural issues that gets at the heart of what these conflicts and desecration of human rights for all people who are in the working class are about. Instead, they get into these various nuanced things where Hashami's able to tap dance all over the place. So you have Hashami talking about, if you give us evidence about bin Laden's criminality, you know, and all of that type of stuff, we'll take care of it, and all this on and on and on. Meanwhile, Sam really doesn't want bin Laden. This is all smoke and mirrors. This is just a plastic mind game that they were intentionally playing on the public at time. Now, of course, once 9/11 hit, things ratcheted into another position, and Sam went into his next stage of action. There was no more negotiations, so on and so forth. It was all about the bombing and stuff. You weren't going to have no Hashami come over and try to smooth over the American public about the interests and misinterpretation of the people of the West over in Afghanistan and all of that type of stuff. So this gives you an insight of how these guys intentionally manipulate the mind of the public and the role that they play. Now, this is NPR. Now, NPR is supposed to be, quote-unquote, the liberal, the progressive, but they're right in with them, with the rest of them, in getting into these sidetrack issues and non-class understandings of what was taken on in the place at the in the place during the world at that time, which was going to and is having a direct and drastic impact on large portions of the world population. So the seeds that were developing there, then the population at hand was intentionally being manipulated and misled by the corporate media system, by the U.S. government, by the Taliban government, etc., to get people off track and have a misunderstanding of what this conflict is all about. So that when things do explode, you're more easily manipulated because you don't have a real understanding of the dynamic of the oil barons and other capitalist infrastructures that are in place for domination of resources.
As an example of what Tracy's talking about right now, I just, at work, I met a young man, you know, and young black man, and he thinks that the conflict in the world today is the conflict between Islam and Christianity. And he started, it was amazing though how ignorant like he was of basic facts, because he, for instance, he assumed, he said, there's more Muslims in the world than Christians. Well, we happen to have a computer right there. And I said, I don't think so, because here's the point. Number one, people are born into, when they say something is a Muslim nation or other, people are born into that stuff. Most people never make a conscious decision to adopt this or that religion. The majority of people are just born into it. And Ma, what are you? Okay, well, I'm that too. And that's the end of that. That's about as far as that ever goes, you know? But well, he looked it up, and actually, remember now, Latin America is formally a Catholic or Christian area. So what? Who cares? Yes, I said it. It doesn't really matter, because in fact, that don't put no food on your table. You understand? This is a smokescreen to cause, to one, touch people's emotional nerves and get them riled that these crazy Arab Islamicists are having a jihad against Christianity. See, that's how they rope you in. If they said, look, they're trying to resist the way that the oil is being distributed on the planet, is that something you want to die for?
And that's something relatable. Now, the two clowns, basically, Williams and Jenkins, babble along with Hashami on Bin Laden's guilt or innocence and this whole false flag perspective. That, like I said, keep in mind, this is all pre-September 11, 2001, and before the Taliban government had completely fallen out with the U.S. empire, check.
Mr. Hashami, you were responding to Lauren Jenkins' question about the presence of Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. You said, in your opinion, he is not a criminal.
Yes, he said that he is not a criminal. He said if anybody thinks he's a criminal, they have to give us proof. And unless you have proof, you can't say he's a...
But Lauren said the United States government has given you proof.
They have given us nothing except a CNN clip and an indictment, which is not a proof.
Well, the issue is, you're quite right, that one needs to bring Osama bin Laden to trial to find out just what is the case and to what extent he has been involved in these bombings and other acts of international terrorism. There is a trial going on in New York right now of some of his alleged aides that is bringing out a lot of evidence. So the indictment, I think, that you refer to is probably the indictment that came out of that trial, which is our legal system's the way we start, with an indictment which lays out the cases and the charges against any individual. The question is how do we bring him to justice? I think the United States would like you to send him to a Western court, send him to the United States, and let him stand trial.
So, Mr. Hashami, what Lauren describes is you bring someone to trial to find out if they're guilty. It's not the case that you prove they're guilty before you have a trial. Does that make sense to you?
That makes no sense to me, because justice is not only in the United States. Justice is everywhere in the... And you said about the trial of two guys in New York. We have said that, how do we know that you will not kill a man before giving him a trial? How can you justify trying to kill a man without even giving him a fair trial? The United States tried to kill him. And these two guys who are being tried in New York, one of them is Ali Muhammad and the second is Mr. Favel. Mr. Favel says, according to the grand jury itself, that he has stolen 110,000 rupees dollars from Osama bin Laden. And according to the grand jury itself, he has lied in one of his statements. Then how can you believe a thief and a liar? And the second man, who is Ali Muhammad, he says he is plea bargaining with his prosecutors. And plea bargaining means nothing for us, because justice is black and white. It has nothing to do with deal or bargaining or compromise. No.
So once again, you have a situation where, like I said, there's elements of truth, but they're babbling back and forth about, imagine this. Here you have someone who's trying to be a representative of U.S. policies, you know, Williams and Jenkins, talking about the justice and how justice should be made. Now, during this whole time, you have Mumia locked up, Tulia, Texas breaking off. You have riders riding roughshod through Oakland. You have the whole Central Park jogging thing imploding on them when it became obvious that the teenagers at the time were all framed up and forced into confessions by various techniques and means. And the real person who did it wasn't a teenager, had nothing to do with them at all, was alone at the time. And all these guys ended up getting prodded off to prison under the various ways that the judicial system truly works in a racially biased, class-dominating way. Now, at the same time, you have Mr. Taliban over talking about, you know, justice in black and white and all of this type of stuff. And at the same time, you know, you have all these massacres that were going on. Yeah, like Yaqualang, where around 300 people were massacred by the Taliban in January of 2001. Yeah, people just rampaged over by these thugs and stuff. And here they want to get you into these artificial. They want, one, to get Americans to think in this kind of sectarian way, no, get defensive about their quote-unquote justice system, you know. And then those who are sympathetic to kind of Islamic law and order and Sharia law and, you know, that type of mentality and stuff, and to get defensive around the Taliban and say, well, maybe they're not so bad. Maybe they're just trying to put things in order. Meanwhile, like I said in the beginning, Layla Helms is the one who brought this guy over here. And so here you have someone who is rooted in intelligence agencies and stuff. And she has him over here for the real score, for the manipulation and for the deals that are trying to be worked out by the dominant players in the capital market scheme of things. But next, Hashami describes to William how the Taliban, amongst other things, actually liberated women. So let's check this out.
Now, let me shift ground a little bit and talk about something that American women find so troubling, which is the way that the Taliban treats Afghani women. What is the situation? We've been told that Afghanistani women are not allowed to go to school, not allowed to work, even if they are trained as doctors, lawyers, not allowed even, it seems, to go outside of their own homes unless they're escorted by a male relative. What is the truth?
This is all wrong. We have never said that women cannot go out. Actually, as much as we have done for women, nobody else has done in the history of Afghanistan. Women were sold before our government. We have given the right of self-determination to women. Women can have business and had never this right. In some pockets of the country, including capital Kabul, they might have had some symbolic rights, but in the rural areas, their rights were violated from the beginning. And what we have done is to give them their most fundamental rights. And we have never said that a woman can't be educated, and we have never said that a woman should not work. We have said that women can work and be educated. And still, schools are open for women, but when we say that we are against co-education, it doesn't mean that we are against education for women. When we say that women should work segregatedly, it doesn't mean that we are against their work. And we are doing it now. Women are working in the Ministry of Health, women are working in the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Interior, Ministry of Social Affairs. All, it's right, they don't work in the Ministry of Defense or they're not fighter pilots. And we also don't like them to be used as objects of decorations for advertisements, as it's here. So we do have our own traditions and cultures, and it existed for centuries in Afghanistan. You cannot set benchmarks for us to achieve.
Well, now, do you think, Lauren, that that's the way American women see it, or is that the way your reporters for NPR are telling you conditions exist in Afghanistan for women?
Well, they've changed, obviously. When the Taliban came in,
you did close all the schools for women. You did send women home from their jobs. Women were not allowed to walk the streets unless they were escorted by a male family member. They were isolated. Are you telling us that now you've, after that period of isolation of women, forcing them all to wear the burqa, never to be able to be seen, that you're changing, that you have reopened the schools, you are letting them go out?
Have you ever heard from us saying that we will not allow women to work or education? You will never find any statement by us saying that. Right. When we captured the capital, Kabul, in 1996, we asked women to stay at home and not to go to work. And if they go out, they have to be accompanied by a male. That time, the whole city was full of arms, irresponsible gangs. And we wanted, our priority was to disarm people. And we disarmed people. After that, women are shopping, women are working, women are going to education. We don't have much resources to expand these programs, and we have asked the world and the feminist majority itself that if they really care about the women in Afghanistan, they shouldn't scream from thousands of miles away. If they really want to help them, they have to come there and help them with some kind of assistance. That will make a difference for them. If they open one school for women, that will make a difference. But screaming from here will make no difference.
All right, once again, this shows you how sick this whole process is and the games these clowns are playing. First, let me make it clear, though, that Sam, of course, is in no position to yap about how someone else treats his females. They're running around tasering women, pregnant women, handcuffing little girls, what was she, 8 years old and stuff. In Florida. So it's clear that these clowns are savages, but these are just two savage thieves in an artificial dog fight in their own dog pile manure. You have a situation where there's a movie out. It was done by an Afghan guy who was around during that period and stuff like that. It's called Osama, and it's about this family where the mother, her daughter, and the mother's mother, so the young girl's grandmother, they're living basically by themselves. The husband has been killed during the whole Mujahideen Soviet conflict. So they have no way to feed themselves, even though the mother has some skills, but under the Taliban's regime, that stuff's not tolerated. So what ends up happening is they disguise their daughter to look like a boy. They dress her as a boy the whole bit, and she goes through this whole thing of trying to navigate in now a male world. She ends up working for this guy, making coffee or bread or something like that. And then she ends up getting taken off to one of those schools, where they really put the whole whammy on you, got you, and all that type of stuff to drone you down and stuff. So here you have a situation where movies have been done about that time period, trying to depict the historical accurateness of what was going on during the Taliban regime. And you can see the draconianness play itself out. So here this guy's pretending, and also all the archival records and current records. And during that same time, it's kind of interesting. See, like if NPR and this whole Talk of the Nation stuff wasn't in cahoots, they could have had people on, and like a representative of RAWA, the women's activist organization in Afghanistan, who has done a lot of documentation. There, one of their women was actually one who actually had a camera under her burqa that filmed the execution of a woman at a stadium, being shot in the head by one of the Taliban guys and stuff like that. It's on a video now, in their website and stuff. So they could have had one of those representatives to debate and undermine a lot of this stuff that Hashami is saying. But see, during that time, Sam was trying to still work it out with the Taliban. So they're trying to spin it into this like cultural misinterpretation. So you hear Hashami yap about, you know, we do have our own tradition. Now, first of all, a lot of that's this smoke and mirror. They're hiding behind so-called cultural tradition or religious tradition because right preceding that, you had a number of women who did have access to school and a higher education, work, so on and so forth. So the Taliban seizes power and they try to cloak controlling women and other people under the guise of cultural and religious differences and stuff. It's all smoke and mirrors. But in this kind of simplistic, gumpified analysis and pablum that's thrown out through the various airwaves, corporate airwaves in America, this is what you get thrown into your membranes. So this is a type of manipulation and a type of cynical action that you see taking place in this so-called discussion. Now next, let's check out as the Pitiful Three, you know, Williams, Jenkins, and Hashami, get into this kind of knuckleheaded false debate over who has free press and freedom of speech in their country and things of that particular nature. So let's check out how this next process plays itself out.
Problem of these two statues was completely different from the rest. And the woman from BBC who was there, she was very irresponsible in reporting. Actually, she had said that there are two groups within the Taliban, and in the near future, they may fight among themselves and do certain things which she shouldn't say, because she is not there to concoct stories for us. She is there to report stories.
And so, wait, that's the journalist who was expelled?
Yeah.
And so when you said kindly asked to leave, what do you mean?
She was asked to leave the country because she was not responsible for her reporting. She said that there are two groups and they may fight. This man may fight with this man and the Taliban may split. All these things are something that she was instigating people to do.
Well, you understand the concept of censorship?
I don't. Within your constitution, this media, didn't the media distort the results of the elections this year? And within your Supreme Court now, it's going on that nobody can talk before the result of something. Here we heard that there were so many stories. CNN said the Republicans won. Another TV said those won and distorted everything. And I know now that there is a law being processed that nobody can say something in advance. And we too have this problem. We do not want people to instigate things in our country. If there is anything to happen, then anybody has the right to say it.
I don't understand what law you're talking about. I certainly don't know of any law that means you can't report anything. We have a First Amendment in this country which allows us to report on anything and everything.
And
that is the approach of our journalism.
Go right
report
ahead.
On anything that has happened, but you shouldn't instigate or predict things.
Well,
and that's in public.
I'm sorry. You've misread our laws. We can predict things. We can analyze. We can discuss disputes among political parties, among factions. We do that all the time.
It's
part of what we do.
And some
of it is looking forward and what are the issues that we'll be facing in the future. There's no law against
that. And here's the biggest thing. We have the right to make mistakes.
Well, you do have the right to make mistakes. But what I try to say is that I read this article in the New York Times that something is going on that when the elections is going on, nobody has the right to say this man won or this that until the results are clear. So I knew this, I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but I read it in the New York Times while I was here. In our country, we have problems and we don't want further problems. So anybody who is responsible, we allow everybody to report the facts, whatever the facts, whether or not they like it. But we don't allow people to instigate insurgencies in our country.
So once again, you can see the whole manipulation in the minstrel show that was playing itself out. here you have a situation where Williams asked Hashami, do you understand the concept of censorship? Now, here's a situation where the dispute on 9/11 and the issues about what really happened and all the question marks concerning the 9/11 attack had basically been censored by the corporate media system very efficiently. You have a situation where the presidential election in 2000, which hadn't happened all that long ago, from which there were speaking in 2001, March of 2001, that discussion that was taking place. Here you had Greg Polis break open the story during the time of the sabotage of the primarily black voters in Florida. This intentionally be censored by the corporate media and not expose the fact that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush were involved in eradicating a large percentage of black and Democratic voters from the election roll under the false pretense of them having a felony background. It all turned out to be a whole fraud, so on and so on. Polis broke the story before Al Hor Gore conceded. Yet, the corporate media censored themselves, and he gave it over to the corporate media. So here you have Williams pretending that here's this open society. Here you have Hashami, whose troops are running around massacring and undermining any kind of freedom of expression. You had women being beat in Afghanistan for laughing. You know, audio tape and other things showing, or videotape and other things showing women being beat by these Taliban thugs just for laughing. They're all in their burqas and all of that stuff they're supposed to be wrapped up in. But the mere fact that they're laughing out in public was seen as some kind of abomination to these criminals. So here these two, three knuckleheads are going back and forth pretending like our government respects freedom of speech and all of this type of stuff. And then Williams tops it off saying, we also have something else, the right to make a mistake. Oh, really? Well, ask Newsweek, which wasn't really a mistake, just some official in the White House or whatever pulled back on what they had said about the little Quran issue. And Newsweek ends up getting flushed in the toilet. And so supposedly the credibility of the story. Please, this is all a smoke and mirrors game. And then you hear Williams and them talk about here we do it, we can do analysis and all of that. Now, put this in the context. Just months later, Sam decides to march off, or was getting ready to march off to war in Iraq, and was justifying it under this whole weapons of mass destruction being located in Iraq. The Office of Strategic Plans and all of this type of stuff is being set up. Now, how did the corporate media respond? Did they do any real on-ground analysis? Nah. They basically were being mouthpieces to the Pentagon. They were allowing Shalabi to infect and flood their airways, or actually infect the minds of the people through their already diabolical infected airwaves that they have is set up to be. So this whole thing is a fraud. This is all a smoke and mirrors game. And it was clear how they were manipulating the public, the listeners, in March of 2001 to get you to think that the struggle and the issues are anything but what they really are about. Capital domination, exploitation, and maneuvering on a chessboard for strategic advantage and control for people's resources throughout the planet, and more directly in this case, in that particular Central Asia region.
Indeed. You know, the whole point, this is kind of macabre. You know, they have some dude trying to justify the kind of foolishness that was going on in Afghanistan, following the Soviet withdrawal. how can I say, if you ever paid any attention to how or to what really went on in Iran after the Ayatollah Khomeini took over, multiply that by 10, and then you begin to see what was happening in Afghanistan. Because Afghanistan, see, they didn't stop women from going to school in Iran. A lot of things that, you know, oh, it's bad now, but, you know, they have a special police that follow young people around and make sure they don't get too silly with that bumping and grinding and carrying on. You know, people walk up into the hills so they can steal a little kiss or two, and these fools follow people. They got nothing better to do. Go follow people and arrest them if they catch them kind of trying to get a little snuggling, a little kiss.
Hey, on the side to that, what's kind of sick is if you check out that book, I'll probably do a thing on it, Lipstick Jihad, by that Iranian woman who was actually born in the Bay Area and went over to Iran for a while. Some of the stuff that she helps expose, and it gets into the whole class nature. And I'll give you like one aspect. She talks about she, you know, wanted to try to get in shape and stuff, and she goes into one of these, kind of their version of a 24-hour fitness. But through her connections, because she was being an interpreter for some of the officials in Iran, she ends up, you know, in kind of a pricey, you know, 24-hour fitness type place. But she notices all these are, you know, all these young girls, you know, her age and younger, who are in there, very beautiful, she said, et cetera, et cetera. They all have makeup on and all of this. They're all done up and, you know, extremely conscious of their physical appearance and this and that. And she's wondering, you know, how are these young girls? Are they, you know, the daughters of these rich guys? And it turns out, no, not the daughters. Not the daughters. All these little mullahs and top, you know, iman type clerics and all of that, they all got their little side girlfriends on the side, and they want them nice and in shape and firm and all of that. So they're all off, you know. So here you got the people under the gun getting their heads chopped off for extramarital
being
affairs,
stoned.
Right, all this crazy
stone people,
crazy type of stuff. And then once again, see, it gets into this class thing once again, see, because they're using these hocus pocus invisible beliefs
to suppress the working class.
Right, they throw it out there as if this is the thing you should be concentrating your whole world around. Islam, Christianity, you know, and all of that. Meanwhile, they were running around frolicking and all of that type of stuff.
Big fun.
Just getting it, getting it on.
And that's why revolutionaries to this day, you know, not everything that has happened in Europe or the United States was a bad thing. And one thing that happened in Europe, particularly, I'm looking at the French Revolution and the American Revolution, and that is the separation of the church and state. Vital importance. And here today, they like to talk all this stuff about Afghanistan. Well, you ain't got to go to Afghanistan to see the separation of the church and state being violated. It's right here in the United States with that faith-based BS with, you know, old boy George and them.
Well, they know it's a wedge issue. They know it's a way of gumpifying the population up even more, because it has them thinking on very narrow terms, in the same way that these guys are manipulating the issues at hand. Now, the people who, you know, and getting people thinking it's a cultural misunderstanding, a Western versus, you know, this kind of Islamic way of thinking, etc. And both of them are playing the cards, both, but behind closed doors, they're working out strategies concerning resources and stuff, which is going to determine who dies and who lives, which is just how it ended up playing and how it's playing itself out. These are manipulators.
Yeah.
But next, to show how the gumpification and chauvinistic process works effectively, here some individual in America who's been properly marinated by all of this hocus pocus cultural quote unquote mulalish talk. This caller calls in to Hashami to basically give a nod of approval in a sense, in part, in the name of religion. Check this out.
Nancy, who's in Woodbridge, Virginia. Nancy, you're on Talk of the Nation. Welcome.
Hi, I'd like to say salam alaikum to Mr. Hashemi. I'm an American Muslim woman who's been, you know, viewing the situation with the Taliban through the lens of the Western media, and I really just wanted to say that I appreciate hearing the view of someone who's from the country. I think the situation with regards to the women is not ideal, but then it's also exaggerated because the Westerners simply cannot look from the point of view of a Muslim. It's alien to them. They see the women as downtrodden. I mean, I see Western women as downtrodden because they're forced to reveal themselves and dress skimpily and go out and compete with men. And I'd just like to hear him comment on that.
Well, before he does, let me ask you a question. I don't think it's true that a Western woman is forced to dress in any fashion.
Well, I mean, look at what we have as our models, which are models, which are women who are skinny and tall and naked, and women are forced to try and live up to that. I mean, if that weren't true, then places like Weight Watchers and Jenna Craig wouldn't be so popular because we're trying to live up to this awful ideal.
But that's different. Someone being concerned about how they appear, maybe to their mate, to their community, is different than someone being denied the opportunity for education or even to leave their house.
Well, you know, I think the talk about education, it's not as if, you know, somebody came and closed down Virginia Tech and said all the women have to go home. We're talking about a country whose infrastructure was destroyed. It's not like they have universities all over the place and they just set the women home. So many of the teachers were killed fighting as Mujahideen. So you're acting as if, once again, you're viewing it through a Western lens. And if things had to get extra tight before they can go back to a more moderate line, then that's the case. And it's not a perfect situation. But I think viewing it, from some superior Western technological viewpoint is not correct.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Mr. Hashami, why don't you respond to me?
Thank you very much for your comments, and Walaikum Assalam. It's exactly right, and I have told the American people here that if my only source of information about the Taliban were the Western media, I would hate them too. Because the media here is exactly reporting things, exaggerating in spicy stories so that sell advertisements simply.
Exactly.
So in our country, the situation is not as simple or simplistic as the people see it here. The situation there is worse. 95% of our people are uneducated. 95% of our people do not even know if the world is round or flat. So to try to talk to them about votes or that thing is ridiculous. All they care about is their food. All they care about is the health of children. It's right, but even in the United States, do still women have equal salaries as men have? No.
No.
Even 75 years ago, did you have the right of women? Did women have the right of voting? No. Everything should be done gradually. Look at about the rights of women in Las Vegas. What about that?
What do you mean?
Women are just sold. Women are just used as objects. Just used as for the lust of man.
Well, wait.
For
wait,
us, it was very surprising.
I find this wild. I mean, wait a minute. People can go to Las Vegas. This is a free society. We have people who fail. We have people who become drug addicts. People who become prostitutes. We have people who commit suicide. It's a free society.
Exactly. This is your society, and this is for us. It is horrible, but we don't criticize you for that. Maybe there are things which are horrible for you that you see in our country. But that is not horrible for us.
You know what bothers me is a fact is a fact. In your culture or in my culture, if you said to me, Juan, your daughter can't go to school, I would say, Mr. Hashami, you and I have a big, big problem.
Please. We don't say that they can go to school. And when I'm repeating it again and again, we are not coming from Mars or other planets. We are from the Earth, and we are given birth by a woman. Our wives are women. Our daughters are women. Our sisters are women. What do you mean?
Well, as I understand it, and again, I'm relying on Western media accounts, you have limited educational opportunities for women. You have limited the ability of a woman to even practice the law, medicine, in terms of using her education. You're shaking your head. You say this is not true.
That is absolutely wrong.
So you can see how sick this whole manipulation type stuff's going on. And how they want to get you off of how all of these market system mullahs, Christian mullahs, Islamic privatizing mullahs, and Abraham tradition, Hebronic mullah situations where they're controlling resources and people, always leads to despair of women and kids and so on and so forth. But here you have this one caller, you know, talk about basically an element of truth, you know, the commercialization of women trying to look real skinny and all of this type of stuff and Weight Watchers and all of that. But I just went into the stuff that's happening in Iran where you have all these young girls under the mullahs, little, you know, their little harem, basically going through the same type of 24-hour fitness. Also, what's in Lipstick Jihad that's interesting is that she describes how a relative of hers takes her one time to this place where all these people are going to get, you know, some kind of work done and stuff. So she goes with her and stuff. It turns out to be a plastic surgeon. And the big thing is to have your nose done, and all these women are waiting to have all this cosmetic surgery, especially on their nose done and stuff like that. Now, this is in Iran. Big bad Iran, you know, Islamic revolution, you know, women don't worry about superficial things, all of that type of stuff. Right. But here, you know, they're grinding the soul out of people, and she describes how drug abuse, especially amongst those who can afford a lot of the serious drugs, is just rampant amongst the youth culture. Heroin, cocaine, etc., etc. There's just a whole underground network where people don't have various forms of expression and outlets. They're being suppressed in various ways, and they're just sinking within and going through all of these other types of ways of doing what. That's kind of hence the title of her book, Lipstick Jihad. You know, it's a jihad through, you know, certain other things and stuff. Now, but see, like I said, Hashami wants to go on and on about you can't understand it, you know, or other women who called in. If this is through a Muslim perspective, this is the problem with the West. They can't understand the Muslim perspective. Look, they at the same time were working with the Taliban and trying to cut a deal over the oil and over the gas in the region. There was no problem with, you know, them being predominantly Christian like Boy George and them being Islam like Hashami. It was about the land. It was about resources. They weren't having no problem conflict over civilization for cultural or religious belief issues. It was over political resource issues that the problem came in. And then at the same time, this is the same government that worked with these Mujahideens against the Soviets.
Millions.
Now, all these little Christian CIA members and people in America, they didn't have an issue with working with the Mujahideen that were Islamic-based, of course. Nah, they worked hoof and hoof. So this is all sideshow type of stuff that these clowns want to push out as a cause of dissension and misunderstanding. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, they're manipulating basically the future of the masses of people. He talks about 95% of the Afghan people don't even know if the world is round or flat. Well, see, that's another element of where religion just helps fit right in, because basically if you believe in all these invisible kingdoms, you do think the world's flat.
Basically. You know what? I hate to say this, but this is where the whole question of the fight for class struggle comes in, because it is only through a concerted, long-term, clearly led class struggle that people can transcend mysticism, which includes, of course, religion and the various little spiritualist stuff they got going on here. But this separation of church and state should not be forgotten. The years that the Catholic Church dominated Europe are called by European histories the Dark Ages. Need I say more?
Now, last, a caller, Omar, also calls in to lend his support to Hashami. Check it out.
Omar, you were saying before the break. Please continue.
Well, I was saying that Afghanistan was playing to a lot of this horrible things in Afghanistan, and the people was disrespecting the women. But right now, the women is unprotected and respected, and everybody is loving and caring about the women. But the Western media is making negative things out of that, which is this is the Islamic rule. But they're not supposed to, expect from Islamic women as a Western woman. We have the rule. And my another thing in Afghanistan was the ally of the United States one time. When we destroy the communism and they leave us alone, and we are killing in each other, brother, sister, don't care about us. And one time he was the friend, ally. Osama bin Laden was the ally and friend. But right now he's the number one enemy, and Afghanistan is number two enemy. So I want to make a comment on that.
Well, I appreciate it, Omar. Thank you for your call. Mr. Hashami, here is someone defending the treatment of women in Afghanistan. But what you're hearing from me, I think what you're hearing from Lauren Jenkins, is concern that women are being denied rights. And what you've done is you've come on the show and say, listen, the image that you have in the Western media is a complete distortion. So the reality is that, now you're telling me this, women can go to school, young women can go to school, can get an education, can learn a profession, and can practice that profession, and aspire to be anything in Afghanistan. Is that right?
Exactly, that's right. And we have said that if that is limited, it doesn't mean that we don't want to expand it. We don't have enough resources to do that. And we have asked several times the world to help us in that. The United Nations helped us with opening 5 faculties of medical science for women, and that is now going on. So we have said that, please help us, but we cannot change the way we educate women. You cannot just ask us that they should wear miniskirts and go together with boys. That's our rule.
All right, as we wrap this up, I'm just going to read a little bit from RAWA, the RAWA.org. They had a statement on the International Women's Day and stuff, and basically it said women's emancipation can only be achieved by the restoration of democracy based on secularism. And they say this little bit about... over the last 27 years, Afghanistan has been trampled first by Russian invaders and their Kuwaiti and Pashami lackeys, and then following the collapse of the puppet regime in 1992, the bloody and treacherous emirates of jihadis left deep and incurable stains on the souls and body of our nation. 4 years later, when the fundamentalist criminal gangs could not consolidate their suffocating oppressive emirates, their foreign bosses brought into play the reserve players, the Taliban, whose ferocious ferocity against the women and men of this land recorded dark stains not only in Afghan history but the world's history as well. Taliban savagery though prevailed in cemetery silence over Afghanistan, but when they showed their disobedience to their American creators by aligning themselves with the Al-Qaeda terrorists after September 11th, their medieval government evaporated. This did not demolish their military power. Instead, the blood of over 3,000 innocent Afghan people was shed. And then it goes on and on. The reason why I mention this, it's not that I agree with Rawa's overall position and analysis on all this type of stuff, but to point out that here you have women on the ground who've been organizing. One of their founders was assassinated, that have roots in Afghanistan, that have a completely different perspective of what Hashami was, yelping out and all of that. But since during that time, they were trying to put a good face, the U.S. Empire, on the Taliban and help them smooth stuff out with their assets. This is the charade that went on, which helped perpetuate a misunderstanding of what this whole issue was truly all about. Now that helps expose how the ruins of these treacherous empires play themselves out on the world stage. Hold on a sec. Well, that's just going to about wrap it up for Slade tonight. It's clear that as long as we follow this hocus-pocus mystery of confusion that these bandits play, we'll continue on an endless slide of shuffling and smiling while starving at the same time. Until the next time, Slave Revolt. Out.
Only the days of our next release, suffering and smiling.